Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 363. Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 363. Your host, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
The Burnet Phone Master currently going through pain.
Yeah, and I think it's been a week for both of us, so maybe we'll keep this on the shorter side.
We always say that, yeah.
If we always say that, and then something happens, or someone shows up, and it goes for an extra hour.
Yeah, we'll see what happens this time.
Yeah. So we weren't around last week, so I didn't have to talk about all the depressing Bungie news.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do that now. So in case anyone missed it, Bungie laid off a bunch of people, their CEO is a piece of shit, and apparently was certainly instrumental in catastrophically mismanaging the company and pouring a bunch of resources into a bunch of projects that went nowhere.
A tragic pattern at Bungie, even when their CEO wasn't a piece of shit.
That's true. But yeah, so it sounds like Sony is involved in trying to get their shit together, although the CEO still has a job, so they haven't done enough yet. A bunch of people laid off, a bunch of projects were canceled. I'm wondering if that...
At least one got moved to some sort of, like, new incubation studio that Sony's making.
Yes. If you've heard rumors that Destiny 3 was canceled, there was no Destiny 3, there's never Destiny 3. There was, however, there was a Destiny spinoff that was canceled. It was apparently a pretty big departure from Destiny, so... it was not...
I don't really know if it would have still been labeled Destiny by the time it came out.
Exactly. So, not Destiny 3.
Destiny 3, as they should call it.
Not sure how many people working on Marathon and Destiny were actually laid off. I was honestly kind of shocked at the headcount at the studio. But yeah, it's not a good time. I think there were reports of some Destiny people being laid off. Lots of rumors and stuff floating around, which I'll talk about in a second. But yeah, they are Sony's obviously trying to get them to prioritize their game that is out and actually earns money, which they should do. So hopefully they will do that, and hopefully Marathon comes out and is good, but we'll see. But there has been a lot of rumors floating around. Hold on, this Fireminer is talking about this. Some news out there have been laying off staff because some of their current projects are in trouble, including Marathon, which seems to lack a coherent vision. That begs the question, does the original Marathon still hold up, and just how different the new game needs to be to make a mark? Yes, the original Marathon, I think, still holds up very well, which...
You can play it on Steam right now.
You can, and it's very good, and its sequels are very
Randall,
good and weird.
I'm not sure about Infinity yet.
They still hold up very, very well. They open-sourced them, so they've actually been, updated and... tweaked over the years. We could have some kind of endless debate how they compare to other shooters at the time, which I'm not going to get into. But yeah, they're very good and have their own unique style over some of the other Doom type games. As far as what does the new one need to do to stand out? I think it just needs to be fun and polished. If it's, assuming it's still targeting that, what the hell they call it, extraction shooter genre. The only thing I've seen of games in that genre is they look very indie and kind of grungy, I think is the best way I can describe it. So I think it needs to look good and play good right off the bat to kind of grab people's attention. So we'll, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on with that project. I know they had a change in director. But I mean, it has to be, I assume, for them to actually announce it, considering the number of unannounced projects they were apparently working on, it had to be in some farther along state than any other project. So we'll see. Can't really speculate until we see some actual gameplay. And as far as the state of Destiny, there's a lot of talk about, oh, they're going to do less content, kind of less and cheaper content going forward. And I think, and honestly, spending a lot of time thinking about it, I think people are taking that completely the wrong way. Well, obviously, that's a cost-cutting measure that sounds bad. I don't think it necessarily is. Because the problem with the game the past few years, apparently, is that sales of their big expansions are declining.
And yeah, you kind of hit this thing with, like, live service games, where eventually it's just, like, if you're selling, like, expansions, like, a la carte, you eventually reach this point where someone gets to be like, no matter how good the new expansion is, it's like, well, I didn't buy the last one.
Yeah. And honestly, not just that, I think kind of the problem is you're spending all this budget developing, like, big flashy campaign missions and giant cutscenes that when you look at the whole of people playing the game, it's a very tiny fraction of anyone's time with the game is actually playing these campaign missions and engaging with these cutscenes and things like that. So it's like you're spending all this development time and getting fewer sales over the years, and it's honestly for content that people aren't really playing all that much. Like, you know, people like the story of Destiny, but I and you know, the campaigns have been great. But I think really kind of the drip feed and weird lore is what people really get into more. And as good as the campaigns have been, like I said, they're a tiny fraction of what people play. So if they're going to make the game leaner and meaner and give us more actual gameplay content more frequently, I think that could actually be incredibly healthy for the game. Like, instead of one expansion, one big thing a year, and then like much smaller things, you know, over the course of the year, could be a lot more frequent things, like, you know, more dungeons, more raids, or just more general new activities and things like that, and smaller story content without, excuse me, wasting time on these big flashy missions that no one plays very much. You know, I think, honestly, something like Fortnite has had some similar issues where they used to have all these big live events at the end of their seasons, which sound insanely complicated and expensive to pull off and kind of a waste of money. We'll see. I can't really say the expansion model makes any sense for a game like this anymore. And considering how much attention they got for a little content update they put that out that reused a bunch of old content and had like crazy number of players rushing, including me, stupidly headlong through a giant boss rush. I think reworking how they deliver Destiny content is kind of something they should do, because it's obviously not working out. And, you know, unfortunately, and I can't really blame people, I get it, like, but I think everyone's getting the wrong idea from these rumors. Like, I think what's in discussion is ultimately going to be better for the game, and people are going to respond to it well. But you know, I guess I could see how it's a hard sell. Like, we're so used to these big expansions and things that it's gonna, anything different is gonna be just frightening. But we'll see how we do it. And obviously the big question, of course, will be how do they monetize it if there's no big expansion? And I don't really know. So we'll see. Could just be more battle passes or something. Who knows? More skins. Don't know. We'll see. But, you know, the game's kind of in a low population state right now. I don't necessarily think it has anything to do with that news. It's just in between parts of a season in the middle of summer. But, you know, the game still has a vibrant community and a lot of people working on the game that actually really love it too. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think there's a brighter future than this game than it really looks like right now, and really hoping some new leadership at some point can get things in a better track. And that's the end of that. And we can talk about other things.
No.
No, you want me to keep talking about this?
No.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. How about the Knicks?
The Knicks? I mean, I don't care about the Knicks. The Celtics won the NBA championship.
Yeah, no, I just said a phrase. Don't worry about it.
I can talk about music because I went to a concert.
Big music, man.
Yes. Everyone should check out the Linda Lindos. They are a punk rock band of a bunch of teenage girls from California, and they kick ass. And they will be very good if they keep at it.
I regret to inform you I was making a Futurama joke about the how about the Knicks.
Oh God.
The joke where they're on the internet and Bender is like catfishing someone and saying like paying for quote unquote naughty discussion. He gets paid and just says, how about them Knicks?
Oh boy. I say, and after them was three old bands. Rancid kicked ass and sound awesome. Smashing Pumpkins still sound surprisingly good. Although weirdly, the band member that was talking to the audience was guitarist, how do you pronounce his name? James Iha. Original member of the
band. I wouldn't talk to Billy Corgan either.
Who came back after many years, I think, some time ago. I don't remember when. Not much Billy Corgan talking. He seems weird.
That's for the best, if you've ever heard Billy Corgan talk.
Yes.
He owns in the past 20 years.
He owns a wrestling company. Some of the wrestlers came out randomly during one song.
Which wrestling company did he buy?
NWA.
Oh, Jesus. That's not just a wrestling company. That's the old wrestling company.
Yeah.
Fucking weird.
Yes. Less weird, his young kids came out on stage during one song and danced around. Appropriately with big headphones to protect their ears.
That's good, at least.
That was honestly kind of adorable.
For those less versed in wrestling, the NWA was like the broker between territories back when wrestling was territory based, and in general the relationship that major promotions had with it was allied with it right up until they're big enough to go out on their own and go nationwide. ECW was an NWA affiliate until the They Can All Kiss My Ass promo. TNA early in its days was an NWA affiliate. Like, NWA is old wrestling.
Yeah. Billy Corgan literally put the NWA championship belt on the worst wrestler ever, Tyrus, and then had both of them appear on Fox News. What the fuck?
I don't think too hard about it.
I don't. He's weird.
Listen,
yeah, some of
I'll still occasionally enjoy listening to 1979.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where his brain is. He can still sing. Maybe you should just do that. That would be good. Sing your weird music.
1979.
But seriously, they seemed insanely out of place in that lineup of bands.
Yeah.
I don't really get it. Other than, hey, these guys were also big in the 90s.
Ooh, can't you never have it?
I think Green Day came out and tore the house down. Played all of Dookie, played all of American Idiot.
I walked past a fucking... I walked past a store that was for some reason playing When I Come Around today.
Nice.
That put that in my head. When are they gonna play all of Cigarettes and Valentine's?
Probably never. And they're probably never gonna, they've already missed the anniversary for like my favorite album, Warning. And they only played one song off of that album during the show. The one song from that album they play ever. That being Minority. But yeah, that.
Have you listened to like Bootlegs of Cigarettes and Valentine's?
No.
I'm surprised by that.
I've listened to like, what the hell is that? Their first indie album called. I don't know, some stupid name. And it's kind of meh.
Cigarettes and Valentine's was supposed to be the follow up to Warning, I thought.
Was it? Oh, is, yeah, that, like is that was, the one that was supposedly the
that's the one that was lost.
No, I didn't know that was actually out there.
I think that there's bootlegs of most of what was supposed to be on it.
Alright, I'm going to check that down. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find more information on that. But yeah, like that's one of those ones that's like it's always weird because it's like, oh, they finished it and then like the masters got stolen and instead of re-recording it, they just crashed it.
Interesting.
Apparently the title track ended up on something called Awesome as Fuck.
That's probably one of their B-sides collections.
It's one of their live albums, it looks like.
Oh, okay. But yeah, listening to Dookie live beginning to end, including the secret track, which was hilarious. Thank you for the bits.
Good on them for going all in on that.
Yes. Which they gussied up a bit and had like a violin track playing. And then had Trey Cole dance out in a bathrobe and sing the song. It was fucking hilarious. I have to find a video of it and put it in Discord. It's hilarious. It was great. Like, I mostly listened to their newer stuff in recent years. But every song
on that album, hope up.
Every song on that album is a banger, and like the whole crowd was singing every song, like beginning to end. It was it was impressive. Oh god, I accidentally put this game on fast forward. Oh yeah, that was great. Then they played some of their newer songs. Their new album, if anyone hasn't heard it, it's very good. Not top tier, but it's got some really good songs on it. I highly recommend it. Including The American Dream Is Killing Me, which is very catchy. It's your typical, funny, ironic Green Day song.
Yeah, as you expect.
Yeah. And then, obviously, American Idiot Beginning to End is incredible. Again, entire stadium cheering, singing along to every single song. But, I mean, both of the... What's cool about hearing like an album like that live and then two of them live is to hear a bunch of songs you normally wouldn't hear live played live. Some of which probably were not even ever played live before this tour. It was really, really cool. So if anyone likes Green Day and there's still a show coming up near you, highly, highly recommend. Very good show. And that was it. We ducked out before the encore because I looked it up and found out it's Good Riddance, which I've heard a million times, and I prefer
a logical encore, but also, but yeah.
Yes, I've heard that in heard that as the ending to every concert I've been to except one, which was the Uno Dos Tres concert, where they ended with Brutal Love instead, which is a better song.
Absolutely. And at least is, you know, not something that everyone already knew was happening.
Yes. I don't like sitting in New York traffic. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those ones that they do because someone who only ever goes to one Green Day concert wants to hear it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. I appreciate it. I'm all set with that. So, yeah, we managed to get probably on the bridge, like out of Queens, before most of the audience was leaving the parking lot. Yeah, that was a damn good show. Bought a Rancid shirt.
Nice.
I meant to send Beat a tweet that said like Rancid shirt Beat variant, because it's like a guy, it's a skeleton with a guitar.
Nice. Yeah, you should tweet that at him on Blue Sky.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. But yeah,
he'll be like, ha ha ha, sick.
my wife has been humming Ruby Soho all week, and now the kids are requesting to hear multiple tracks from And Out Come the Wolves. So,
nice.
Mission accomplished. Yeah, very good concert. They tweaked one line in American Idiot appropriately. I'll let people figure out which line and to what.
What's that?
I said I'll let people figure out which line I'm talking about and what.
Oh, and to what?
On their own. Yeah. Yes.
I've got guesses.
It was good. I was like, yes, yes, love it. But anyway, enough about that. Saw the concert at MetLife Stadium. Very good baseball stadium. With that said, I don't really like stadium shows. I would like to see Green Day again in a smaller stadium, but I think that's...
It's a big enough band that it's harder to get them in a smaller venue.
I'll have to see probably Less Than Jake or someone like that to get a smaller concert again.
Oh, man. They got to be doing a new tour soon, I feel like.
They're in Europe right now. I'm sure they're going to do a new tour soon. It seems like they're putting out some new tracks. Whenever I heard Ruby Soho's theme, I can't help but to imagine Taz singing along. Yeah. I hope she comes back to AEW. She's currently out on maternity leave, I believe. So
yeah, that makes sense. Can't blame her on that one.
Didn't they play her entrance live for one pay-per-view? I think they did.
It feels like it must have happened.
Yeah. Alright. I should probably end music talk, though.
You can keep talking about music. That's a music podcast now. Sometimes it's a Spider-Man podcast. Sometimes it's a music podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Q and Bass Quest. Today we'll be discussing the bass solo in Maxwell Murder.
I'm wondering when Beyond the Spider-Verse has been delayed to at this point.
Well, I'm trying not to think about it. I just want to be surprised with the sudden trailer. Find that All By Myself video before I forget about it. No, not Ed Sheeran. Love yourself, YouTube. God, fucking damn it. Okay, here's a random video of Billy Joe singing with someone, people dressed as Deadpool and Wolverine. Okay.
But why not?
Sure.
Picture of Dorian Gray, motherfucker.
This is this annoying, short, ageless motherfucker. Demands you stand up for every song. Demands you go crazy. He makes you work.
You know what? That's what you want when you're at a concert.
No, so seriously. That's just good. I love bands that do that. Like, I can... If I wanted to just hear your songs, I can just put on the CD.
Yeah. I've only been to the one live concert, but Real Big Fish are a good live act.
No, I can imagine that.
Yeah, you should check them out. I know that one of their traditions is to every... when they usually close out on sellout because it's the one thing everyone's heard. And when they do it, they always do a medley of random songs that were hits in the 90s.
Nice.
While they're teasing that, like, they're going to play their hit.
Green Day used to do a really cool thing where when they played King for a day, they would kind of sit on just, like, the bass line playing and then pull a bunch of people on stage to play the song, play and sing the song, and then also would turn it into... I don't know the name of the song, but it's like a little bit softer now, a little bit softer now. Is it Shout It Out or something? I don't know the actual name of the song, but they would do a banging rendition of that as well as part of that. They probably don't have room for it in playing two entire albums live, but that was pretty cool. They did bring someone on stage to sing part of, shit, what song was it? I don't remember. One of the songs. But that's kind of always a thing they've done, like bring people on, actually let them like play an instrument or sing along to a song. One of the first time I saw them, which I think was, which is in 2000, they actually made a Let's Make a Band. They had someone from the audience on drums, on bass, and on guitar, and just Billy Joe sang the song while they all played it. It was awesome. It probably made all those people's gear or life. I don't know. I can't imagine how cool that would be. But yeah, that's cool. I need to see Real Big Fish. I need to see Less Than Jake again sometime. Are also a good show.
Yeah. I'll always regret that I was not able to catch the time when where they were touring together. That would have been a good one.
That had to have been some tour.
Yeah.
Oh, what is this question here? This isn't a music question, Firemanner. This is cue and bass.
UN Base Quest. But I guess we can answer it.
On this week's
Read it out.
License game news, NFL fans are trying to call for the league to drop their exclusive license agreement with EA again, and football fans are holding their breath for UFL which is billed as a free-to-play rival to FC 25. How strong is the case for open license? Open license.
And I think an open license is
sports games.
I think an open license would be good, but I also think that like the issue you'd run into is the amount of tech that needs to be built to make a modern football game.
Yeah.
And the amount of publishers that could actually do it at this stage, who would actually be interested in servicing that market. There's obviously theoretically money to be made in competing with Madden, but you're looking at least, you ink the deal, you're probably looking at least 3 years before there's like an actual game on shelf. And that's if you're rushing. Like, that's if you produce kind of a bad game the first time. And if you do that, of course, you're competing against Madden. Like, people don't like a lot. People feel like Madden has gone stale or blah, 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 blah. But, like, Madden is still feature rich. Madden still has everything you expect it to have. So this new game, maybe it's good, like, on the field, but it doesn't have, like, the full franchise and season modes. It doesn't have everything that you expect it to, because it's the first swing at things. Like, they rushed it to market. Like, if they don't rush it to market, it's like 4 years, maybe 5 years, shooting a moving target. How long did they actually license the league anyway? It's terrifying, just like, because the nature of making a modern AAA sports game means that like actually producing a competitor to Madden nowadays is nearly logistically impossible, because you just don't have the technology base in place.
I don't know. He also said, can we hand wave eFootball's failure as typical Konami blundering?
Maybe. eFootball, that was their, that was what became a Pro Evolution, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's what eFootball is, what Pro Evolution turned into.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Uh-huh. I'm just gonna unplug and replug in my headset.
Yeah, I think they tried to do the thing that people. I think they tried to do the thing that people always say they want, where like they released a game and then like just updated it every year. I think that ultimately one of the issues you run into with that is like part of the reason you put a box game on the shelf every year. Like, this is the same reason that like, you'll sometimes see people being like, why are they releasing, like, you'll get a game that's like a box with a download code in it, and it's like, why do they do that? And it's like, because that's like, the box being on a shelf is advertisement, more effective advertisement than any digital storefront, unless you are front paged for weeks.
Yeah.
And so you get something like eFootball on consoles, where they sold a game and then like promised that they would just sort of update it every year, which seems to be what happened here, as far as I can tell. You run into this issue of like, there's like the, if someone buys like eFootball, they don't know how up to date eFootball is. They don't know if it has like if their favorite team is accurate, or all sorts of other things. And so you run into this issue. And of course, it's also just like, that's been on the shelf for years. Why would I pick up the old one? It's also a case of the consumer has been trained to expect that like, oh, I should pick up the new one. Like, that's the one that'll have an active player base. That's the one that will have my team up to date, all of these little things that people sort of expect. And so when someone actually did do that thing that people say they want, where it's just like, oh, release a game and then just keep updating it with DLC, you end up having to remember that, like, if you ever look at, so, like, you look at something like a live service game, especially something that lives on, like, skins and shit, the individual skins don't cost that much to make. An individual skin, for the most part, if you're just selling skins rather than loot boxing, which is its whole other form of immorality, but individual skins don't sell that great. You know, like, you'd be lucky if, say, 5% of players were like, I want this new skin. But in the aggregate, that doesn't matter. They don't cost that much. But, like, downloadable expansions to games just don't sell that well. Like, a downloadable expansion that sold to 30%, like these are just numbers that I remember hearing from, like, I think it was I think it was Mark Darrow, the guy who does a bunch of old BioWare, who was on a bunch of old BioWare projects. He sort of talked about, like, a DLC expansion selling, like, 30% to 30% of the people who bought the base game is, like, wild levels of success for DLC. 10% attach rate is more like what you expect. Like, downloadable expansions just don't sell that well. People who aren't super into games don't pay that much attention to them. Like, that's also why there's always that temptation to sell expansions on, like, as part of some sort of enhanced edition, some sort of Game of the Year edition, because it's like an excuse to put the game back on the shelf where more people will buy it than when it's just a download. There's just all sorts of things working against that idea. Did I cut out?
No. Sorry, I should not. I should not play a game that requires reading on these streams. It's always a mistake. Or at least wait until I'm in a dungeon. Save it there and then play that on the stream. Pew says, or, you know, like Destiny, really lock content behind a battle pass and an expansion. Well, it sounds like they're probably going to go away from that in some extent. But, I mean, yeah, like, I always forget that because I buy, like, the deluxe edition of the expansion pack, which just gives you the battle passes for the whole year. I always forget that if you just buy the regular expansion, that's an additional $10 every few months. I can't say that I love how they do that, but I mean, it's probably going to be the battle pass part going forward by the sound of it. We'll see.
Yeah, I didn't have an actual thought in my head. I just said things.
Let's see what else they missed in chat here. Joe says, I'm a Bad Religion, Black Flag, and Dead Kennedys fan. I know who all those are because of Tony Hawk. So what wrestling games sometimes do is they have a roster of all the retired Legends of Hall of Fame wrestlers, such as in the case of Legend of Wrestling. Even Rock Band's game did that. Can you do that with a sports game? How many people even care about the Hall of Fame baseballers or NFL players? Probably enough to make you some money.
There have actually been plenty of games that have had, like, some number of Hall of Famers in them. Yeah. Just as sort of a, like, bonus all-star team sort of thing.
Yeah. Pew missed my big talk before about how I think they're wasting money developing expansions that no one plays very much of. Yeah, they're going to get flamed no matter what they do at this point. I think they just need to deliver.
There's too many people there. Yeah. Too many people with stakes.
Yeah. They just need to deliver good stuff. Like, I think they were kind of flamed for, before it came out, for Into the Light, that mini expansion before the Final Shape came out. And then everyone loved the hell out of it when it was out. But yeah, I don't, the expansion model isn't working. Like, not enough people are buying it. If the game's going to survive, they have to do something different. So, like, if they're not going to give us campaigns anymore, I honestly don't give a shit. Like, instead of wasting development on these big flashy campaign missions that people play for like a week, take that money and develop more like activities and strikes and dungeons and PvP stuff. Like, the content people actually play, like, people like the story of Destiny, but I think they're spending too much time on the story content, too much time, money, and development effort on the shit that people spend very little time on, and aren't even buying anymore. So, yeah, they got to do something different. And they're going to get flamed for whatever it is, but I think based on the rumors that are coming out of it, people are taking, in my opinion, are taking it the wrong way. Like, they sound like, oh, they're just going to give us less. I think they're going to actually give us more of what we actually play. And hopefully that'll work out, and then we'll see how it goes from there. But, yeah. Especially after the last expansion, Lightfall, which was kind of bleh. And then we had a year of awesome content that less people played because the campaign was butt. I think the expansion formats for that game is dead. And I think that's for the best, to be perfectly honest. But, yeah, that's enough Destiny talk. If it's less but quality content, that'd be fine as long as the replayability is actually good. I think that's the idea. Like, you look at the Into the Light expansion, which was just reused content, and I spent so much time, like the 1 month that was out, playing and having like the time of my life.
Yeah, I think they sort of implied Into the Light was the future of Destiny at this stage.
And
so,
I don't necessarily think that means they're going to just reuse content. I think that
just that kind of expansion.
Yeah, that kind of update, like new modes, maybe some remix content. Yeah, like another boss rush mode, I think people would go ape for. But just like new activities, new loot, less campaign missions, and that's fine. Like, we play those campaign missions, they seem expensive to make. Those cutscenes are expensive to make, and like, you play and watch them once, and that's it. Like, it's not working for the game. It's not working anymore.
You would love working anymore.
Yeah. Notice for anyone who cares, the Naomi Dreamcast shoot 'em up Under Defeat will be re-released, and I fell asleep mid-sentence there. I'm so sorry.
Explain what the sentence was so that I may react properly.
Notice for anyone who cares, the Naomi Dreamcast shoot 'em up Under Defeat will be really released on all modern platforms in December in Japan.
I mean, that's nice. I don't have strong opinions on the game, but it's nice when things don't disappear into the ether.
That's a sentence that, like, just turns my brain off. I'm sorry.
You have this, like, built-in antipathy towards anything relating to the Dreamcast that I don't think anyone but you understands.
like Dreamcast, you mush like Dreamcast and then shmup into the same sentence, and it's just like.
How do you feel about Marvel versus Capcom?
Marvel versus
Capcom. That's a Dreamcast game, buddy.
Gonna take you for a ride.
Gonna take you for a ride. How do you feel about Capcom versus FNK 2?
Was that released on Dreamcast before anything else?
Well, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, it's a Naomi game, buddy.
Motherfucker. God damn it.
How do you feel about Capcom versus SNK 2?
I love it. It's the best.
It's a Naomi game, buddy.
How do you feel about SNK versus Capcom Chaos or whatever the fuck it's called?
It's not very good.
Okay. So
I don't blame them for how it came out. They were in dire financial straits and just sort of had to push out a game because that was like the license was getting close to lapsing. But the resultant product is not good.
So what you're saying is I can ignore that limited run release of that game.
Yeah, SBC Chaos is something that, like, if you see it for like $5, like, yeah, it's funny to fuck around with. But it's not worth, like, full price.
Okay. Good, good, good.
But, yeah. I'm hopeful we'll get, like, a CBS 2 re-release. Just given that we got Terry and Mai in Street Fighter and everything else going on.
That would be good. That game is very, very good.
Yeah. That also has extraordinarily top tier Blanca for some reason.
It's weird. I don't think I've ever actually used Blanca in that game. Yes, I should.
Let me double check what the general consensus tier list is. Yeah, Blanca is top one in that one.
Interesting.
It's very funny to me. That's easily the strongest Blanca in history. I forget which grooves are really good.
Guardian. Good running. I have to see if I can get the PS2 version of that. Working on my PS3, so I can stream that.
Oh, Petra's calling. I'll patch her into the feed.
Or I should say Joe's hacked PS3. Some scorn on
Earth? Not exactly.
That lives on my desk.
Ruben tells us an Ahamkara claims territory in this region.
Farmer asks, anyone here to play and to buy the Doom plus Doom Pack 2 pack?
They have a history of eluding you.
They technically probably already have it, just by virtue of having Doom. Because
yeah.
I know that it upgraded in a number of circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, I need to play more new Doom. Not sure if I have the capacity to play any more old Doom.
You gonna play Doom Dark Ages?
Yes. Fuck yes.
But, yeah, I love old Doom. I think the old Doom is still great. But, you know, and this is, you know, if you don't already have it, like, this is all the old Doom you could ever possibly want. It's original Doom with fucking, you know, the fourth episode. It's Doom 2. It's master levels of Doom 2. It's Final Doom. It's Sigil. It's like, it's all of the official Doom content that's ever happened, plus another new episode made by, like, Machine Games. So, like, it's all the Doom you could want.
That sounds cool. You know, we never did what we've been playing.
Oh yeah, what have we been playing?
The Legend of Heroes. It's very good.
Nice. Yeah, I'm feeling the call, the siren's call. I will be jumping back into Cold Steel soon.
Yeah, I need to really dig into Trails in the Sky Part 2 and Part 3. Just have not been feeling the Steam Deck lately. But I need to.
So you're just doing more Daybreak.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want to do Daybreak 1 and 2 and just have those done and just keep up with those So I don't want to file.
Well, going back for the eight games that you're missing.
Yeah.
Second chapter, third, zero, Azure, Cold Steel 1, 2, 3, 4, and Reverie.
It's kind of turned into an unofficial expansion of last year's Summer of Falcom. I'm playing East 9, trying to tidy that up, and also Little Tokyo Xanadu, which I think I'm mostly going to play on stream, honestly.
It's a good stream game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep that as like a game I play through on stream.
Consider a Falcon for all seasons.
Yes. East 9 is obviously very good. Not the greatest port on Switch, but it's fine. Very playable.
Acceptable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my copy of Cold Steel 4 is slowly making its way to me. Thank you, Will. I'm feeling the urge to jump back into Cold Steel 1, which I'm nearly done with. Whenever I run into a gap for the games that I have, I can see it approaching, I lose motivation, but now I will be out of gaps, so... I've got Reverie, I've got Daybreak 1, I've got Cold Steel 3, so it's just Cold Steel 4 that sits in the middle of the ones that I have on hand. So that'll be fun. What have you been playing besides Daybreak?
Some Unicorn Overlord on occasion. I swear there was something else I fired up recently. It's mostly been Falcom stuff. Really digging Trails Through Daybreak. The whole combat system is really cool. Really smart. Like, hey, let's action your way through some lamer combat and then switch into turn-based combat whenever you need. Very, very cool and smart idea. Yeah, I'm guessing they're going to be using that in the Trails games for a while. I think I noticed with all the companies about the upcoming Silent 2 remake is that aren't under all the talk, but whether it's a faithful remake or does the original game worth a remake, the loudest voices still boils down to, I have to shoot some eyes before I can read the rest of this question, or I will die.
I only heard half of that question.
Either the characters are ugly and $70 is too much for a remake. People complaining about Silent Hill 2 remake.
Oh, the actual reason to not care about that is that I don't have any sort of trust for Bloober Team.
Yeah, I can see that.
I heard you say Silent Hill 2 remake, but I didn't hear it properly the first time. I thought you said Sonic 2 remake, and I was like, what?
Sonic 2 remake.
But yeah, the actual reason that I don't trust the Silent Hill 2 remake, a good remake is absolutely worth $70. Like, my favorite game of the year is part of a remake. But, you know, it's one of those things that, like, Bloober Team are inexpert at handling any sort of nuanced theme, and... the stories we've heard from, like, people talking about the game's development are that, like, they consulted with original team members who said, you should change this, and they said, no, we won't change things. And it's like, well, then why are you bothering?
That sounds bad.
Yeah, like, if you're not willing to make changes, then spend all this time and money re-releasing the original game in a way where it actually looks and plays accurately. That would be nice. But no, instead you're doing a full remake, but, you know, like, I'm sure that they'll find ways to, like, I don't trust them not to fuck up the art direction, and I don't trust them to fuck up some of the very delicate themes that the original game doesn't always handle perfectly, but I would trust them even less to handle. Also, I looked it up, the Doom 1 and 2 thing, and it's like, oh yeah, you're supposed to get, like, the enhanced versions if you own either Doom 1 or Doom 2, and I think I own both of them on more than one platform, so... Nice. Yeah. They added a bunch of new maps to this on enhanced version, so I think probably.
We should try that out sometime. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, although also Marathon multiplayer sometime. So it definitely has online. Yeah, it'd be fun to play and mess around with some of those old shooters. Thank you for the bit, Firebrenner. How many people would say that playing Silent Hill 2 Remake or Final Fantasy X HD or Persona 4 Golden is a waste of time because no modern engine can replace the PS2 fog and texture? What the fuck?
People do make this argument. I think it's super, super dependent upon the game's art direction. Silent Hill 2... I mean, like, I do think that it's the one that's the most hurt by the lack of proper fog. So, for those unaware, the PS2, like, the fog in PS2 games is often done by, like, a weird quirk of the hardware. Like, an intended feature, but it's, like, a quirk of the hardware. Nothing else renders fog the way that the PS2 does, but it meant that fog was kind of free on it. And so, another example I would say is that, like, versions of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas that aren't on the PS2 tend to look insufficiently smoggy, which is part of the early 90s LA aesthetic. Sorry, just responding to something, but yeah, the answer is that, like, I've mentioned many times, like, that I'll have, like, strong opinions about, like, playing versions that look accurate to old versions that look correct, but that for most players, especially new players, you should just play a version. You should just play the best version available to you, and not worry about, like, oh, there's no, like, none of these games are made unplayable just by virtue of the fact that they don't have, like, that they don't perfectly recreate some random effect. Like, random is not being fair, but, like, because, like, there are certain graphical inaccuracies. Those irk me as a fan of the original presentation. But they don't, because the games are strong, it doesn't, like, the game isn't ruined by their lack or by them being, you know, incorrectly interpreted. Like, I still enjoy some of the other versions of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, obviously not all of them. I still enjoy other versions of Silent Hill 2. Like, it should be noted, Silent Hill 2's fog was incorrectly rendered on the Xbox version, which came out 2 months later. Like, the fog amount, but, you know, that's still, it's still great. It's still a great game. Like, there's an ideal version, but sometimes there's an ideal version, I should say. Like, you know, Persona 4 Golden, like, you lose some of the fog aesthetic, but at the same time, like, the new content is good, and, like, it's rough to lose. So, you know, I would call that one, like, pick your poison, but I would usually recommend Golden to most people. But yeah, like, you know, you have to sort of, like, you can't chase the ideal forever. There's always something wrong. There's always something that, like, wrong even can get to being a strong point. There's always something different. there will always be something different between versions. There's no escaping that. And it comes down to how hardcore you are about granular differences. How much do you care? But ultimately, again, we as hardcore nerds tend to get really lost in the weeds of, what's a good version? Well, it has to be exactly right. That's the only version you should play. But, for most people's purposes, it just needs to be good enough that, a new player would play through it and get the core idea. If you can get that 90% of the experience. I'm being generous about how much I would even say some of these things exist in terms of quote-unquote 90 being a full 10% of the experience. You can get a version that gives you that 90 to 95% of the original experience. I'd prefer that people have that 100% experience, but there's limits. There's limits to what people can do. There's limits to what most people care about. And more than anything, it's good to have something available. So you'll never hear me say that people shouldn't play Golden, shouldn't play the HD versions of FF10, much more than anything to do with fog or other graphical effects. Certainly there are, I know people with strong opinions about things like the character model swaps in the FF10 HD remaster, that sort of thing. But certainly more than anything in FF10, I feel like the thing that bothers me is just the inability to to shut off the, dark aeons, which can make the end game very obnoxious for new players. I'm more annoyed by something like FF12 Zodiac Age never giving you the option to use the game's original license board that it shipped with.
Mm.
That feels to me much more you've created a substantively different version. But
you know, to play that original version if you wanted to.
What's that?
And giving you no option to.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't include the new version. I'm saying that you should have an option to play the game, at least your best approximation of what that original game was. There's a very real argument to be made that the Zodiac job system version of 12 is the ideal version, but it's fucked up that you can't actually play the original version in any official capacity anymore. Unless you track down that original PS2 release, you just can't play it. That game, when it was released, they fully balanced it with the idea that everyone gets access to the same job board.
Yep.
And you just can't play that version anymore. That job board has been, fired into the sun. That's what I mean when I say, because there's always fights over, what's the best version? And it's for 90% of players, any of the versions is largely equivalent. And, if you're the sort of person for whom, any given version is not largely equivalent, you probably already know which version you want to play. But I'm never going to, warn away a casual player from, don't play that version unless it's, heavily compromised. They cut out huge amounts of the game, or they made huge sweeping changes to how it functions. That's when I'll start caveating, be sure that you're aware that they did this and whether you care about that. But
in that vein, Fireminer asks if Silent Hill HD is acceptable now.
I mean, honestly, its biggest sin is mostly just that it's building from, for two at the very least, it's building from a extremely limited it's building from a beta. They did not have Konami had thrown out the final release source code, didn't exist anymore, so its developers had to use their own best guess on what it was. And the other problem that it runs into is, and this, the tale that I always heard was that the Silent Hill HD collection had a much lower budget than, say, the Zone of the Enders HD collection. And so you put those two things together and you get something that's kind of rushed. At the same time, like, yeah, it's aesthetically, it's not perfect. If you have access to another version, the other version is probably a better bet. But, like, if you just want to experience what Silent Hill 2 was, or Silent Hill 3, yeah, you can play through that. And you'll probably have a pretty good experience. Like, you know, you are running into some other things. There are some, like, freeze bugs that were added to that version that are, like, difficult to deal with. But, like, I'm also one of those people that, like, when they redid the voice acting, because, like, they redid the voice acting for Silent Hill 2 because people had been clowning on Silent Hill 2's bad voice acting for 10 years at that point. They redid the voice acting, and the second they redid the voice acting, they were like, no, the old voice acting was extremely, like, it's supposed to be weird and ethereal, and it's like, I mean, I kind of get how you could draw that atmosphere out of it. To me, it's mostly just kind of stilted and not very good. But that's an eye of the beholder thing. Mm. And how much you care is going to be very down to the individual. Joe, I don't remember.
Go ahead. This is a separate topic, so.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if they ultimately were able to get through yeah, they did eventually include the original voice acting anyway. So the big issue you ran into was just incomplete art assets that were inexpertly, like, because they were built from the beta, they had some incomplete art assets that had to be sort of restored to what they were supposed to be, and they're kind of incompletely done. And there's some bugs, but ultimately, like, you're still mostly getting Silent Hill 2 and Silent Hill 3. And I think that they're still worthwhile games to play in that context. But, yeah. So, what was the next one?
Jeff says, don't worry, folks, I'm trolling him on his phone directly. Good news, he's finally placing his potato PC.
Who?
I am replacing my potato PC. I am
right, actively
looking to upgrade my computer to something slightly more modern that can play Destiny at 60 frames per second.
What if you ate a big potato, though? That sounds pretty good.
Does sound good. Potatoes are good. Yes, I need to update my PC. Not looking for top of the line gaming. And I don't even have 4K
monitors.
Middle
of the line gaming.
I don't even have 4K monitors, so I don't give a flying fuck about 4K.
Yeah, that's something.
I swear to God, Joe, or anyone else, if you throw out some stats about how this graphics card or that graphics card can do 4K at 120. I'm gonna vomit all over your fucking PC or something. Equally ridiculous.
It reminds me of the bizarre Arrested Development line where, like, Tobias is just like, that just makes me want to puke all over your head, good sir. Need to rewatch Arrested Development.
Yeah. That's a quality show. Joe says I prefer red potatoes.
Good. So there's a lot of good varieties of potato.
Fireman says, has anyone here heard about Fate's Day Night being released on modern platform with tons of bugs? A friend who's been telling people to play the fan-translated version, and this only gives him more ammunition.
Allegedly, the translation itself is fantastic, and the bugs were fixed within, like, 3 hours of it releasing.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, like, apparently, as far as I can tell, the bugs, like, the word through the grapevine on Twitter was that the bugs were related to it using, like, it making assumptions about character sets that fucked it up, which makes sense for a visual novel.
Yeah.
But they just, like, were able to get that fixed within hours. So it's like, yeah, if you care about Fate's Day Night, there's apparently no reason to worry about the remaster anymore. It's apparently quite good. And again, everyone I know who cares about Fate who has played it seems to think that the official translation is fantastic. I don't know much about the the fan translation. I assume that the excerpts I have seen of Fate's writing are from that. I don't know if there was a recent retranslation attempt or if this is an old fan translation. The excerpts I saw, which would have been from around 10 years ago, did not fill me with confidence and led me to think, perhaps unfairly, that Kinoko Nasu is kind of a bad writer. That might have just been the fan translation's fault. That's part of why I'm not champing at the bit to play this, is that, like, I simply did not find what I read interesting when I saw, like, excerpts from many years ago. Yeah.
Joe also says, I recommended good 1440p parts and systems, and yes, I know, I'm just being a butt. Yes, this is why I asked you, because I know you'd actually give me good recommendations.
We're gonna have a TV party tonight. But yeah, by all accounts, the official Fate's Day Night Remastered is quite good. Maybe if I see it on sale, I'll pick it up to try to give it a proper chance, but it's going to need to do a lot to interest me, because, like, pure strain visual novel with, no real puzzle-solving element, nothing, but, like, it lives and it dies by the strength of its writing.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why, like, people in the know saying that the new translation is really, really good is the only thing that makes me think, like, maybe I will give this another shot. And I would not recommend Wheels ever do it, because, like, the entire medium seems to destroy him.
There's got to be one I would like. I just don't know, like, what it would be.
Never found it.
No. I really thought it was going to be, then Tears to Tiara, because it's like Sting developed
it's
SRPG.
Got that thing. It's a super thing.
Yeah. It wasn't even super thing.
Super thing. Good
Idea
times.
Factory. But you
Thinking
know,
about super thing.
Instead, it was like the SRPG portions were good, but everything else was just butt.
The actual, like, visual novel was just not well written to maintain your interest.
It's that, and I thought it was really badly written and extremely poorly paced, like glacially paced. But I mean, more than that, I feel like if you're going to do a hybrid of a visual novel and something else, then it needs to be a hybrid of a visual novel and something else, and that game was just mostly...
Rather than a visual novel that has something else stapled into it.
Yes, and that was, it was often either one or the other for long stretches, and with little balance, and often, like, contradictory things where, you know, you finish a battle and you can have whoever, like, dealing the final blow to a character, and then it just does a story thing where whoever kills the boss. Which just makes it feel disconnected. So, Yeah, I mean, maybe there's some straight visual novel out there with the right story I would enjoy, but I don't know what it is. I don't know what that is. Then some, you know, I get so many emails about new games, and every time I see like a neat looking thing from Axis Games, I have to say, okay, let me look at the screenshots. Is this a visual novel? Before I read it any further about what this is.
Otherwise I will become bored and fall asleep.
Like, it should not be something I'm against. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, I read comics, I read manga, which, yes, I know, are comics.
It's just when you're sitting down to play a game, that's not what you want.
Right. Yeah, but that, and it's just like, I haven't found one with just like...
It was well written enough to justify itself.
Or even just like a story concept that makes me interested enough to kind of give it a try despite my reservations. I haven't seen anything that's like, well, that seems like a really neat story. And, oh, fuck, I died. I just haven't seen it, so... Yeah, I don't know. And if anyone listening has any recommendations, like, feel free to share them. You know, I'll take a look at whatever. But I've yet to see it.
Hello. Up next, Wheels talks about Evolution, the World of Sacred Device.
What the fuck is that?
As a Dreamcast Sting RPG.
Oh, that one. Yeah, I actually tried that and couldn't get into it. These PS1 RPG, which one is the worst? Ancient Roman, Ode to the Sunset Era, Satami no Nazo, Hakai King of Crusher.
Hakai King of Crusher is art.
Not Treasure Hunter.
It's also not RPG.
And
now Treasure Hunter is also
hard. 10101 Will the Starship. What? Did I read that
okay,
title
so
right?
Only, probably. So I've only played three of these. I love Hakaio, King of Crusher. I love Not Treasure Hunter. And I still need to finish Ancient Roman Power of Darkseid. All of them have some sort of amateurish charm to them. Hakaio, I love for being like such a weird premise that ultimately has like a grounded emotional core that only really reveals itself at endgame. Mm-hmm. And if you sit around and think about it for too long. Not Treasure Hunter is a game that is, for those unaware, it's basically 5 minutes long with like a bazillion endings. It's really fucking weird. Like these endings involve things like, you know, you doing like the ending of a section of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, or you fighting a ghost pirate, or like a million other just random ass things happen. A lot of them not terribly related. But like Not Treasure Hunter is like daffy and weird, and like I don't even, it's hard to even ascribe a genre to it. And then so like the ones I've played, I would call Ancient Roman the worst because it's the most identifiably normal. Like it's clear what they were trying to make. And it's just clear that they fucking sucked at making it. like, it has its moments, it has things that are neat about it, but it's also, like, it's just like, oh, this is obviously a Japanese RPG of the kind that you would get on the PS1, but made through some combination of, like, lack of budget, carelessness, and lack of expertise in a manner so amateurish that you can barely describe what you're seeing. but, you know, it's still identifiable what they were attempting to make, which makes it less charming to me than something like Not Treasure Hunter or Hakaio, where they're making such
where the games are such weird swings in terms of their actual structure and design. So yeah, of the one, three among those that I've played, I would say Ancient Roman's the worst.
Okay.
Will's just gonna smile and nod.
Yes. I don't know what any of these are. Not sure I want to know. And we have no other questions currently in the chat, so maybe we should start wrapping this up before someone shows up and starts talking for an hour.
Yeah, I'll do a quick, I'm going to do a quick look to see what the podcast section is so that we don't completely abandon everything that's in there, because I know that there's some stuff. Okay, nothing new at least.
Normal new 3DS. Had the normal new 3DS been really released officially in North America? It was released officially in North America.
Yeah, it was. Initially, it was like as part of like specific bundles, but eventually there were just like normal new 3DSs you could buy.
I'm pretty sure it was a smaller release compared to the XL, but it was officially released in the U.S.
Yeah, it was later, and it was, again, initially it was just as part of, like, special, like, here's the Animal Crossing new 3DS or whatever. But eventually they did just release at least some amount of just, like, you could go into a store and buy new Nintendo 3DSs.
I mean, I think it was definitely a lot harder to find, but I mean, I got one on the secondhand market for not too expensive back in the day. Probably way more expensive than the XL now, but it was there. Does everyone or anyone? God, why must you get my way, ad break? Now I have to scroll. As much as I love the new 2DS, its construction really feels cheaper than the new 3DS. Yes, it does. Its inside is held with a lot of tape, and even the task of changing the shell is difficult. A pain when you consider that my white new 2DS is starting to get yellow. Do you ever think about opening your consoles to do maintenance? No, that sounds like a recipe to destroy my console.
Yeah, I learned very young not to do that. Like, this is an old habit to die hard.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I'm scared to I don't even like taking off like the cover of the new 3DS to take the SD card out, which is why I haven't hacked that one yet. Although I think using like the where you can remotely connect to the SD card, I think you can just copy the files that way.
Probably.
Yeah.
For me, like growing up, there were occasionally situations where like my brother at least once tried taking apart a system to try to get it to work better. And ultimately that just fucked it over so that it didn't work at all. And it took us forever to replace it. Cause it was like one of those things where it's like very quickly I learned like, oh, if I open it up and it gets worse, I don't get a replacement. There's no, like, I'm just going to have to live without it. And so you just sort of learn to live with shit. Yeah. But the new 2DS being cheaper in construction makes sense just because that was always the idea behind the 2DS line was like, what's a cheaper 3DS?
Yeah, and I mean the new 2DS. Wasn't it just the new 2D? Was it called it? No, was it just new 2DS? Was there new 2DS?
It was the new 2DS XL. Like I don't think there was ever a new 2DS non.
Yeah, that's what's confusing me. It's a very nice little console, but it was also like available very cheap. So,
it was a very late life revision designed to produce like a cheaper end run version of the console.
Yeah. See, has anyone thought about how lucky it is that the OG Xbox with the Pentium 3 instead of 4? Having seen the inside of an Xbox, I dreaded to think how will it cope with Pentium 4, which had always run hot? Maybe that's the reason it didn't have a Pentium 4.
That was probably at least part of it. It's also just that the Pentium 4 was always one of those processors that people were like, oh, this didn't have the performance returns we were expecting.
Am I the only person that thinks the 2DS's shape makes it perfect as a gift for kids? It just looks like one of those Etch-a-Sketch. No, that was very
100% good for that.
Very clearly a for kids console, and it's very, very good at that. I have some that really isn't many anymore, but I have those for my kids, and it's
The 2DS was not coincidentally released right around the first time a 3DS Pokemon game came out.
No, those are good.
It was designed to be chunky. It was designed to be something that the kid could hold and be less likely to, like, to have fewer points of failure that a child would break. And it was designed to be very cheap, so that they could successfully sell as many Pokemon games as possible. And, I mean, good going. Worked.
They're very good for kids.
It was built for purpose.
The man who shot Liberty Man.
Sorry. I guess we should probably run it down. Close it down, because, man, I had a long week.
Let's do this last one real quick. I've asked about icons and selective memories, aka fan. Okay. What? Fans, but what about icons that just exist for decades without any memorable moment? Garfield, for example, is iconic simply because the creator licensed him out to anything. Or Martian Manhunter. Apparently, no DC writer ever knew what to do with Martian Manhunter.
A Martian Manhunter, I feel like, is iconic to a generation because he was in Justice League. Where he does have, like, an iconic aspect of that team's ensemble, where they do know what to do with him, where it's like, you know, he's an alienated character, but he's still a hero. What does that look like?
I mean, I think there's some characters sometimes that just work best as not being the main show, as just being part of the team.
Oh, yeah, like... I think that a lot of times, one of the things that you'll see a lot, especially with, like, you know, how you'll do a spinoff, and it'll be like, here's this popular character, and now they're on their own show, and, like, it doesn't fucking work, because the character was designed to work in, like, a specific group dynamic, and when they're on their own, they don't make any sense. And that becomes a problem a lot of times when you see spinoffs. I think that, you know, Martian Manhunter is a character who works great in an ensemble, in a group, where he has a specific, a dynamic to play off of, like a contrast that is set just by his existence on a team. But something like Garfield, just get that original, like, I think that it's one of those things where it's like, it's a comic strip. It's it's comfort foods. Like, you know, you open a, like, for many years, you would open up the newspaper, you read the comics. It's just something to do in the morning that, you know, puts a smile on your face. And a pleasant-looking character making, you know, gentle jokes in the morning is enough to engender a lot of fondness in someone. So you don't have to be instantly iconic if you're just always there.
That makes sense.
I think we'll close it down early for tonight because sleepy. Gaijin was not here, but you should still support your local author and check out his books, like Tanuki as a Teapot and Princesses at the Pizza Parlor, which are all available on Amazon, via Kindle Unlimited, or Dead Tree formats. They're all, you know, none of them is going to break the bank to pick up. If you want the vicarious joy that comes with following a tabletop campaign, but with the artisanal handcraftedness of the work of an author, you can check out Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. If old Japanese folk tales are more your speed, Tanuki's Teapot is there for you. These will be available on by searching for the name Michael Yarimizu, Y-A-R-I-M-I-Z-U, because Michael Baker is ungoogleable even before Google became useless. So give those a look. We referenced a bit dear friend Joe, Smokin' Joe Gamer, who streams on Twitch and has archives and other videos on YouTube. If you just go looking for Smokin' Joe Gamer, you'll find those. I know that he played a bunch of games for JRPG July. I can't remember. Is it Arcade August? I know he's doing some themed stuff for August as well.
Maybe Arcade August.
Yeah. But, you know, check that out. Twitch.tv/SmokinJoeGamer. YouTube is SmokinJoeGamer. A lot of different things from a lot of different types. Even if you want some non-gaming content, I know he's done some music content there as well. So give that a look. If you, for some reason, can't get enough of us, we should be having some sort of regrettable stream on Sunday, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, as our weekly shenanigans broadcast. I'm not sure if that's going to be more Splinter Fade, if we're going to do some more KOF 15, since I'm finally home and not dying.
There'll be a game of some variety.
There will be a video game occurring. If you want to ask us questions, you can ask us questions if you catch us, like dear friend Fireminer did this week. Thanks once again, Fireminer. You can ask us questions if you catch us in the chat. At 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Thursdays. We might be doing something on a different night next week, yes. Depending upon if Wheels has things to do.
I'm at a concert, so we will be a different night or not at all. Hopefully just a different night.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Under normal course, you can catch us at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Thursdays. You can also... you can also ask us questions in the comments section on rpgamer.com under this very episode, or you can ask questions in the podcast section of the RP Gamer Discord, which you can get an invite to by going to the community tab of RP Gamer, which is a lovely community whether you want to ask us questions or not, but we do appreciate the questions, so please feel free to reach out. Otherwise, though, I think that covers it, so see you, Space Cowboy.
See ya.
Cold, the air and water flowing, hard, the land we call our home. Push to keep the dark from coming, feel the weight of what we owe. This, the song of sons and daughters, hide the heart of who we are. Making peace to build a future, strong, united, working till we fall. The air and water flowing hard, the land we call our home. Push to keep the dark from coming, feel the weight of what we owe. This, the song of sons and daughters, hide the heart of who we are. Making peace to build a future, strong, united, working till we fall. And we all lift, and we're all adrift, together, together. Mm-hmm.